The next case for argument this morning is Raymond against Gonzalez.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Guy Croteau. I am the attorney for the petitioner here, and I was the attorney in the proceedings below. This is a petition for review of a denial of a motion to reconsider following a hearing in immigration court where the immigration judge essentially took over the proceeding and asked virtually all of the direct questions, had cut off the direct examination abruptly, and then...
Why are these arguments open to review now? The Board of Immigration Appeals dismissed the appeal as untimely, so this is all on a motion to reopen, which rests on newly discovered evidence, evidence that couldn't have been presented in the initial appeal. And it looks to me like all of these arguments could have been presented on an initial timely appeal.
Not on a motion to reopen, but a motion to reconsider.
To reconsider. The same
which
point.
Is
there any argument you're making now that could not have been presented to the board on a proper timely appeal?
We had filed...
No, you're not answering. If you, instead of filing with the immigration judge, which was an option available,
yes,
to look at that again, to look at the case again, if instead you had filed an appeal from the original order within 30 days, which is what the statute prescribes, is there any argument that you are now making that you could not have made in such a hypothetical, timely, as it were, appeal directly to the BIA instead of trying to go back to the immigration judge?
Your Honor, they are the same arguments, but they were made in a motion to reconsider to the immigration judge.
Well, I understand that, but that was a strategic choice that you made. Somebody might, I'm sure you had reasons for doing it that way instead of going directly to the BIA. Be that as it may, the BIA still has the 30-day appeal rule,
mm-hmm,
and it chose to enforce that rule in this case.
That's
by
correct.
Saying that your later appeal was untimely as to the first order.
That's correct. And it was my understanding we're here on the motion to reconsider. I did appeal both the initial
merits, but you're simply assuming that we will treat this as if it were a timely appeal from the initial decision. You know, we say for cases in the district court that if you don't take a timely appeal from the district court's decision, you can't revive the claims and get the equivalent of a belated appeal by filing a motion under Rule 60B.
Correct.
Well, that's the equivalent of what's happened here, and you need to show us that it is permissible now to treat this as if this were the equivalent of a timely direct appeal of the immigration judge's decision.
The regulation provides that you can either file an appeal with the board or you can file a motion with the court. I chose to file the motion with the court. That motion was denied by the judge, and that was appealed to the board.
And what I would say is that kind of motion to reconsider is usually, and I believe in the immigration setting, there's no exception to this rule, addressed to the discretion of the judge. You know, did I do something wrong? Is there something I overlooked? And there's an extra layer, if you will, of deference that one gives to that. So instead of just a fresh look at, say, your due process arguments, you have to kind of step back and say, is there something that you called to the judge's attention that it was an abuse of his discretion not to reach? It's not quite the same thing as a direct review.
I understand that, Your Honor, and that was my point in filing the motion to reconsider with the court to address the issues that he had essentially taken over the hearing, that he had limited the direct examination, that he had not allowed petitioner to present his case. The judge chose to believe that he had conducted apparently a full and fair hearing. We disagree with that. And to the extent that the regulations allow either an appeal to the board or a motion to the judge, if the motion is made to the judge, that should have the same appealability as the original motion. The basis is slightly different, but the motion was to bring to the attention of the judge and to allow him to correct what we believed were the errors in the proceedings below. He chose to not recognize them and denied the motion, which is why we appealed that to the board also. We had previously filed some jurisdictional briefs with this court in regard to a motion to dismiss on the first issue with regard to the first appeal. And I understand that we're here just on the motion to reconsider, but that motion to reconsider presented to the judge was intended to point out the errors to him, that there was a lack of due process. He had taken over the case. He was not allowed, the petitioner was not allowed to, or counsel was not allowed to do any rehabilitation, essentially. He was not allowed to follow up on where the judge had left
off
in questioning.
Right, you explained this in your brief. Let me ask you this, which I had trouble stepping over for the moment, the point we were talking about initially.
Okay.
It was very hard for me to tell from your brief what, in a perfect hearing, Mr. Raymond would have brought out that he didn't have an opportunity when all was said and done to bring out.
Question of the fear. In asylum cases, if there is past persecution, there's a presumption
right.
of future persecution.
You know that.
Or he has to establish the reasonableness of his fear of returning. At that point, he was retiring. He actually retired
right,
when he was
but that's
in
the
United
record.
States.
He brought that out.
Correct.
So what else? What's the, in a sense, the proffer, if you will? What's the missing piece that was not there and thus the immigration judge wasn't able to come to a proper decision?
What was missing was why Mr. Raymond had the reasonable fear of returning. The judge touched on it briefly, but it was not able to be fleshed out.
The judge thought clearly that you were.
I'm worried about the same question as my colleague. Did you make an offer of proof? That's the way you bring to the attention of a reviewing body evidence that you wanted to put in and the trial judge didn't let you get in. Did you make an offer of proof?
I did not. I did point out
Did you file an affidavit afterward saying, I'm sorry I didn't have a chance to make an offer of proof, but here's what I would have put in had I been allowed to. Any affidavits here?
I did not, Your Honor. It had actually been moved up 6 months. We had been waiting for additional documents from Pakistan, but
that's why I asked about the affidavit, something you could do afterward,
right.
Perhaps in support of this motion for reconsideration. File the affidavit saying, look, had I been given a full opportunity, here's the important stuff, and here's why it's material, why it could change the decision. But no, you agree no such thing was ever
provided. I did not have the affidavits from overseas at that point, and because of the time limit I had filed the...
You don't even need to have them from overseas. The offers of proof are things drafted by the lawyer saying, here's what I would have got in. Well, anyway,
okay.
Here we are.
We had been waiting, again, for documents from overseas, which we did not have, but that was the hearing date had been moved up 6 months. But we did point out to the board that we did not offer an affidavit of exactly what that testimony would have been, because I would have been trying it in front of the board. Some of it would have been based on his testimony, and I believe that should have been brought out in the hearing. We could have presented an affidavit to the board, possibly from Mr. Raymond explaining further, but that's actually what the hearing is for.
You're down to your last minute, just so that
okay.
You know if you want to save anything.
I'll reserve the rest of the time. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Rett.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Erica Ritt, and I represent the Attorney General in this matter. In this case, petitioner relies on his dissatisfaction with his 27-year military career as grounds for an asylum claim. He has twice conceded that basically his claim is that he was discriminated against while he was in the military service. Petitioner had a full and fair hearing on his application for asylum and related relief. In fact, his claim was reviewed several times by the Department of Homeland Security, by an immigration judge at the hearing and on the motion to reconsider, and by the board twice. The merits of the immigration judge's decision, as this court has observed, was not timely appealed. Instead, petitioner argued in a motion to reconsider that the judge's active questioning during the hearing violated his rights to due process.
Does the State Department have a view on the current standing in Pakistan of people who supported the Bhutto family?
Your Honor,
either Zulfikar or Benazir, or
Your
both?
I apologize. Your Honor, I don't know what the State Department's current position is on that.
I didn't ask what its current position was. My initial question was, do they have one?
Your Honor, I don't know if they have one at this point. Because the merits of the immigration judge's decision was not appealed, we're here on the limited issue of whether or not there was due process, whether or not petitioner was afforded due process during his immigration hearing.
But of course, Judge Easterbrook's question goes to the, as it were, missing evidence that we were talking about. Because if it turned out that in one of the State Department's, let's say, their 2004 report on Pakistan, they had a long section that said people who supported the Bhutto family, which has been a longstanding political family in Pakistan, continue to be the subject of terrible harassment by the Musharraf regime, et cetera, et cetera.
That would be the source of a real
Then you would think, well, maybe this man really has reason to worry about being sent back there.
Now, of course, no such offer of proof was made, but I would have expected the United States in this case to be able to answer that question.
The country conditions report was submitted. It is on the record. It was considered by the immigration judge. Also,
we're asking about things that happened after the immigration judge acted. What's the problem in seeing that?
I apologize, Your Honor. I don't understand what you're saying about after the immigration judge acted.
Oh, just go ahead.
Petitioner had a meaningful opportunity to be heard. Petitioner now complains that the immigration judge was too active in his presentation of the evidence. But here I think the immigration judge, while he did limit the extent of the testimony and did interrupt petitioner, this court has repeatedly rejected this type of judicial involvement as a due process violation. Rather, the immigration judges, unlike the cases cited by petitioner.
For what it's worth, I don't see what any of this has to do with the due process clause. One never reaches constitutional arguments without first considering principles of administrative law. I can't imagine anything that would be proper under normal APA principles that is disallowed by the Constitution. So why is everybody turning first to the Constitution?
We're turning first to the Constitution because that is the narrow issue that was raised by petitioner on his motion to reconsider. That is the only issue that he raised. Because he did not timely raise a direct appeal, the merits of the case are not before this court. It is only the issue he raised in the motion to reconsider, which is his due process challenge that has brought us here today.
I think Judge Easterbrook's only point is the government might in the future consider when such challenges are made, pointing out that ordinary principles of administrative procedure also protect someone's right to a fair hearing, and those kinds of things are actually correctable by the board. It actually adds an arrow to your quiver, because if somebody hasn't asked the board to take some step that it could take, they have perhaps not even exhausted their remedies. But which is why, you know, covering the bases, you know, moving from the administrative procedure to the constitutional argument is normally a very worthwhile thing for the government, and for that matter, for all sides to do. So I think,
I think going towards how the hearing is conducted, this court, the board, and the regulations have all identified that the judge does have a right to conduct the hearing in a manner that he or she sees fit to manage the courtroom, which is what occurred here.
Well, that's right. Immigration judges have the right to question witnesses directly.
Which is what this judge did.
No, the question is whether, looking at the transcript at whole, assuming we could, you know, reach back all the way, we've drawn the distinction between an immigration judge handling matters such that entire fields of inquiry are precluded versus simply active questioning. One hopes it's done courteously, but even if it's snippy, as long as it doesn't go over that other line, we have tended to say that there's no redressable problem.
I agree, Your Honor. And I think what's become important here is that was petitioner afforded a full and fair hearing, not who conducted the questioning, not what percentage of questions were asked by the immigration judge versus petitioner's counsel. The ultimate issue is, was petitioner afforded a full and fair hearing? And in this case, we unequivocally state that indeed he was. In fact, the immigration judge helped, in many cases, pull his case along, helped him get to the point of his asylum claim. Some of his questioning was very routine and housekeeping matters. You know, can you spell that name of that town for me? Can you spell that individual's name? This helped establish a record for review. This is what the immigration judge was hoping to accomplish. As to your earlier questions regarding whether or not there was an offer of proof, there was no offer of proof. But the Attorney General at this point would also like to point out that petitioner had the opportunity, did have some letters in his possession, which were not timely submitted to the court. Petitioner also said that he had some documentation that remained in his home that he did not bring to court. The whole issue of the hearing being moved up 6 months is really a red herring, because no one raised an objection at that point to the hearing being moved up. The Attorney General states there was no due process violation. Petitioner had a full and fair opportunity to be heard. And in the words of the immigration judge, petitioner's case was simply general and meager, and petitioner cannot demonstrate prejudice to his case. As to the whole timing issue, the dismissal of the late appeal on the merits, the board was well within its discretion to deny the untimely appeal. And for these reasons, the Attorney General respectfully requests that this court dismiss the petition for review.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Croteau?
Just
I would just briefly note, Your Honor, that, again, while no offer of proof was made, we did raise in both our arguments to the immigration judge and to the board that what we had intended to point out was the basis for his fear that there was more evidence that could have been obtained. We did not state exactly what that evidence was, but there was certainly points made in both the motion and in the appeal to the board that the reason for his fear, the types of beatings and threats, what the phone calls, what the content of the phone calls, which the judge never got into, I wasn't able to flesh out the details that the judge had just touched on. And there were so many of them that I'm not sure how I would have done an offer of proof other than to say that we really should have had a fuller hearing. But we did address that in the motion. Thank you.
The case will be taken under advisement. The final case for